Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to him belong, they are weak, but he is strong.
And welcome to episode 15 of Once Upon a Nightmare. I am your host Lorraine, and I'm here to discuss the horrors of the world, be it fiction or real. This week I am going real slash fictional. This one depends on what you believe. So do you believe the Lutzes and the story of the Amityville horror?
It's the kind of house they don't build anymore. A relic of a time when the world wasn't in such a hurry. When there was still time for a little charm and elegance. It has stood empty for a long while. And at the price, it is a bargain. For a growing young family, it is almost too good to be true.
What do you think?
I love it.
James Brolin, Margot Kidder, Rod Steiger, in the Amityville Horror.
Peace in this house. Get out. Get out.
Hello?
Hello, Kathy? Father Delaney, there's something very important.
After the Lutz family moved into their dream house, they were running for their lives. What happened to them is an experience in terror you will never forget, and you will believe in the Amityville Horror.
The Amityville Horror movie was released in 1979. It's a 15 and runs for just under 2 hours and was directed by Stuart Rosenberg. It is the first film that was released based on the experience of the Lutz family as told in a somewhat questionable, over-exaggerated book, The Amityville Horror by Jay Anson, which sold around 11 million copies. Anson tells the story of the 28 days the family spent in their newly purchased home at 112 Ocean Avenue. This is, of course, the address of the DeFeo murders from 1974, where Ronald Butch DeFeo Jr. murdered his entire family, which I do discuss in my previous episode, episode 13. The Amityville Horror has been turned into a franchise, and as of a post from November 29th, 2019, there were 23 films that have used this story in one way or another. I myself haven't seen many of them, but I am quite curious. The movie grossed around $86 million, and at the time of its release, it was one of the most successful independent movies going. It was second in its year, losing out to Kramer vs. Kramer, and it was actually a really good year for films. So this film did well. It beat out quite well-known films such as Rocky II, Apocalypse Now, Alien, 10, The Jerk, personal favourite, Star Trek and Moonraker. And there was, of course, a carbon copy remake in 2005, which starred Ryan Reynolds and Melissa George, and that made well over $107 million. So this has been a very lucrative story between those two films alone, the books, and all the other related movies. The 1979 version stars James Brolin as George Lutz and Margot Kidder as Kathy Lutz, a young couple moved into their new home on December 18th, 1975. The house is cheaper than you'd expect it to be, but they soon find out that the reason for the low price tag at only $80,000 is due to the history of the home, the DeFeo murders. Strange paranormal occurrences begin to happen, which made the Lutzes flee the home after only 28 days of occupancy on January 14th, 1975, leaving behind everything they owned, never to return. James Brolin, a very bankable star, apparently was paid very little for the film, but it was agreed he'd get 10% on the sales, and he ended up making about $17 million from it. Margot Kidder herself, a bankable star, especially off the back of Superman, you know, had something to say about this film along with James Brolin. She thought the whole thing was quite ridiculous and never believed a word of it, and she can't believe that anyone actually took the story seriously. Brolin himself has also stated that he isn't convinced either. He has said, you know, as of George, a charmer, you had to believe him. I mean his story, the way he'd tell it, it was great. But he was such a good salesman. You'd realise he could be selling you sand. So there was a lot of doubt there. And when you talk to the children, he said that you would ask them about it and straight away they had an answer. It was like they had been schooled on how to answer. And that was kind of his take on it. And he walked away going, I don't know, I don't believe in all this stuff, but why am I not so sure? Despite Brolin's reluctance to believe it being true, he did find the film scary and he read the book and found that terrifying. He said it was so well crafted that he couldn't put it down. There was, of course, a lot of hype around the movie with regards to things happening on set. And it's kind of the norm in this particular genre that people think that all these spooky, unexplainable things happen. But apparently on this set, nothing happened. And Kidder also mentions how the press would ask her if the story was true. And she would look at the writers and ask them, and they'd always reply, we'll never tell. Both actors did visit the house itself, but it wouldn't be shot in Amityville. It would in fact take place in New Jersey. This was due to the fact that the village does not enjoy the reason it has been placed on the map, so they refused permission. Between the story from the Lutzes and the murders, the village just wanted to forget, and I'm sure this location has attracted many a curious mind. The house itself has changed. The eye-shaped windows that we see in the film are now apparently a regular square shape. When the Lutzes moved into the home, they were newlyweds, marrying on July 4th, 1975. They moved in around a year after the DeFeo murders. Kathy had three children from a previous marriage, Daniel, Christopher, and Missy. But before marrying George, he insisted that all three children were adopted by him and they changed their last names. So the children were changed from Quarantine to Lutz. And son Daniel has spoken about this. He was not happy and he did not want to change his name. And he let George know this at every possible turn. But in the movie, the names of the children were changed to Greg, Matt, and Amy. But even with this story, even if you didn't know what the movie was about, you'd kind of know you were in for a scare. And this is solely down to the opening credits. They show this blood red sky with piercing red eyes, you know, from the house looking upon us, those creepy moon windows. And it also has this really creepy, haunting music. And that is from Lalo Schifrin. He was a composer who was nominated for Academy Award for the score of this movie. And we're also introduced at this point to the murders of the DeFeo family. Straight off, we hear the sounds of gunshot blasting through the house amidst all this like rain and thunder and lightning. And we never really see a face of the person as they move from victim to victim, raising a loaded gun. So while watching this, you'd be very confused as to what was actually happening if you didn't know the background, but you would know it was something really unpleasant. The police then come to take away the bodies and discuss the time of the murders. What time do you think it happened? Anne replied, 3:15. So that is one thing that keeps popping up within the movie, is the time the family would be woken up, around 3:15 a.m. And it's also said that the DeFeo murders were committed around this time. The book was of course exaggerated with the times in which George would wake up and wander around the home. It would be between though 3 and 3:30, not dead on a time. The issue with this is over the years the story has slightly varied, and when interviewed in the 70s, George would say, we woke up. Later on in interviews around 2003, he would say, I woke up. Changing from we to I could simply mean he's forgotten. It's not as clear. Or it could simply mean the fact that he was no longer married to Kathy, so it was quite normal and more natural for him to say I rather than the whole thing being a hoax. And also, I will say with this story, there are so many stories out there. What is true and what is not? One such story is when we are introduced to a disturbing scene rather quickly once the Lutzes have moved in, and this is the scene with the priest, Father Delaney. That's played by Rod Steiger. And this is a very exaggerated version of what actually happens. In an interview in Good Morning America in 1979, we see George and Kathy joined by James Brolin as they discuss the house. George and Kathy discuss how Kathy's hand was touched during the day and how flies would appear in hordes, and no matter what they did, no matter how many times they tried to kill them, they would just keep coming back. We see this being portrayed in the film when a priest goes into the home and he can open a window. Their flies start to appear, and quite a few, more than you would normally see. So as he tries to open the window, it won't happen. The doors slam shut. And in this scene, why this priest is experiencing this terrible horror that's going on in front of him, we look out the window and we see that the family, the Lutz family, are enjoying this idyllic life that they really think they're in for. They're outside, there's a lake, there's a boathouse, they're on a boat, they're laughing, they're playing, they're riding in this boat. It's pure bliss, and they're completely unaware that the priest has arrived and he's stuck in this room. And at this moment, the priest is struggling to breathe, but he is shouted at by an unknown force to get out, and the door opens and he leaves. This film is definitely one that brings the theme of religion and the Catholic Church. And it was quite the theme in the 70s. I suppose back off the back of the 68 Rosemary's Baby, we then move on to films such as The Exorcist and The Omen. And we also see the way in which the church handles this whole situation, how it deals with possession. Delaney wants help from the church, but they pretty much laugh in his face. And this is kind of something you do hear from time to time. Here, Murray Hamilton, who plays Father Ryan, he pretty much takes on the same role as we see in Jaws when he plays the mayor of Amity Island. He is beyond obnoxious and he feels he knows it all, and you really, really dislike him. But when the Lutzes moved in, they did get a priest to bless the home. And this is in fact true. And they, you know, it's a common occurrence for some people of faith within their homes to get a priest to come in. But the priest, within an interview that I watched, he never really mentioned the flies. And this would appear to be a direction the movie would take. It would go for impact. But the priest did mention that the house was cold. He said it was a warm day, but there was definitely an unnatural chill to the home, which the Lutzes have also mentioned. And the priest, the real priest, has gone on to say that he was told to get out by a rather deep voice, and he was also slapped, and he also did have blisters appear on his hands, which we do see within the film. The priest himself has spoken also about how he tried to call the Lutzes, but would struggle to get through. Interference, couldn't hear anything, no one could hear him. The phone would answer, but there was so much interference that he could never really say what he needed to say. Plus, we see Kathy trying to answer the phone and getting nothing but static. But as she explains this to George, we can kind of start to see him getting into this strange mood. He's complaining about the cold, yet the thermostat reads that it's warm. And throughout the movie, we do see George slowly losing touch with reality. He becomes so cold, so distant, and just damn right horrible to everyone. And while this film was before, as we see George's descent into madness, it's quite similar to that of Jack Torrance from The Shining, you know, being taken over and losing touch with everything and everyone around them. George's eyes are beginning to look quite empty, bloodshot, and he isn't even sure as to why he's feeling like this, but it does get a lot worse. He often looks like he's suffering from a really bad flu mixed with a really bad hangover. And then, of course, we have Kathy's three children. And I don't feel they really focus on the boys as much in this film as it does on Amy. Amy, of course, has an imaginary friend named Jodie, which, according to the real George Lutz, his daughter Missy did have an imaginary friend. And while it's perfectly normal for young children, it doesn't usually leak so much into the home towards everyone else and cause them danger. But Jodie in this, she's not an innocent imaginary friend. Jodie manages to have quite a strong influence on Amy. And we see this particularly in a scene where Amy is being babysat by Jackie. And before we see Jackie go into Amy's room, we have this whole creepy music again, and the eyes of the home are lit up, that sinister kind of orangey red. And Jackie goes into the bedroom and then she goes in the wardrobe to get some clothes, and the door slams shut behind her and she's unable to get out. She tries frantically to get out. She's becoming really angry, really scared, and then of course the light goes out. But she's pounding on the door so hard that her knuckles actually bleed. And Amy is completely unresponsive and she just kind of sits there staring at this like rocking chair, rocking with no one on it. And it takes Amy's parents coming back to let her out, only to find that there's like nothing wrong with the door. And Amy's and Jackie's like, I couldn't get out. It wouldn't open. I wouldn't open. But there's nothing wrong. While little things happen here and there, the film is a slow burner. And the things that do happen can be explained away. But it's kind of when we get to the last bit of the movie that really, you know, things really start getting going. Up until now, we've seen like black substance coming out of the water, which can be explained as like pipes. And although the real George has said that, you know, there wasn't black in the water, the porcelain did go black. We've seen red eyes, mood swings, distraught babysitters, swarms of flies. But in the last half hour, it really takes a turn as they go into the basement and they start knocking down this wall into a red room. And we see George as he looks at the red wall and it reflects him back to it, which, little fun fact here, that was actually James Brolin's brother that played that role, because they're very similar. But they've got guests in the house at this time and they're down there with him, and one of them starts talking in a really strange voice and she becomes really hysterical. And then it cuts over to a priest who seems to be having like this weird experience too, and it just really starts to escalate. And while Delaney does make another attempt to call the Lutzes, he prays for them and then he goes blind, which I think was a bit strange because I thought that didn't make sense to me, that bit. The end few scenes, they really do go over the top as the film takes us to the last night. George has been sharpening his axe. He's wandering around the house like his life depends on it. Kathy is frantically running to get her children. There's thunder, there's lightning, there's rain. It's just so loud and so chaotic. And she's trying to get her kids away from George. There's blood dripping down walls as George makes his way from room to room. The children are hiding in the bathroom as he tries to break in that kind of a Shining-esque manner. And he tries to put an axe through Kathy, but luckily he stops himself as he kind of comes to his senses. So now George has come to his senses. They all run out of the house. They get into the van, but they forgot the dog. So George has to go back and get the dog. And of course, this bit is completely made up, which has been said by son Christopher. George then crashes through the basement stairs and gets covered in this weird black tar, and the dog then helps him free himself. And they try to leave, but the house doesn't want him to leave. The door slams shut and he has to smash a window to get out. But they do escape and they do drive away, never to return. And that's one thing that investigators have said, that they went back to the house and, you know, I've seen pictures of it. The fridge is full. Everything looks like someone has just popped out for 5 minutes. They left it lived in. So the fact that they never went back for anything, that is extremely bizarre to me. Even if they went back with people to get their stuff, but they never apparently set foot in this house again. So the movie, we know, it's a bit exaggerated, but what evidence other than the words do we have that the house was in fact haunted? The words we have is from Butch DeFeo, the Lutzes, the parapsychologist, the Warrens, but what physical evidence is there? There's this picture of a young boy, the Amityville ghost. This was shown in a 1979 interview. The picture was actually taken by well-known paranormal investigators in 1976, Ed and Lorraine Warren. Now, these names have popped up quite a lot recently with films such as The Conjuring, and they also worked on famous cases such as The Schmerl Haunting. And we only have the words of people as to what happened. So why would they leave a perfectly great house that was a steal financially? And some have said George couldn't afford the repayments and he fell behind. But, you know, someone else did say this. How could they fall behind on payments after only 28 days? Did they make a mistake in buying the house and in realizing this come up with this bizarre story? Or did it actually happen? There is also the story that the Lutzes made up the whole thing with the lawyer of Butch DeFeo, William Weber. They had a few drinks and come up with the story that the house was never haunted. And while the Lutzes may have made some money from the story, I've never heard it was any kind of big money, and also Weber wanted the story so he could present it for a new trial for Butch DeFeo and get him off for what he did for murdering his family. But I think one thing to keep in mind here is what we see in the movie is not what George and his family have necessarily said. George especially has been the first to admit that, you know, things have been blown out of proportion. And Christopher Lutz himself in an interview has said that the only thing they got right about the movie is that they actually moved in there. Although he did say that he saw a shadowy present and he was scared to live there. But he also says his stepfather George has made a lot of it up. So it's definitely a question of what you choose to believe. So do we think something actually happened in the home? I think something happened, but what actually did, we will never ever truly know, and I don't think anyone will, because it's what you choose to believe from the people that experienced it, and some of them are still alive today. The Lutz children have answers, but their experiences may be very different, and you don't know what their minds have blocked out. And it was over 40 years ago, and memories can fade. So where are they actually all now? George and Kathy Lutz, they divorced in 1980s. They had two more children, and Kathy died in 2004 of emphysema and George died in 2006 of heart disease. Daniel Lutz himself has been very vocal in his experience of what happened in 112 Ocean Avenue. And in the documentary, My Amityville Horror, you can see his frustration when telling this story. It's like he has to keep convincing people what happened. And you can also see that the whole experience has really taken its toll on him, and not only what happened, but also how the situation was handled. And the story will never go away. It's a really interesting watch, and I would recommend seeing it. But watching him, whether you believe or not, you can tell that he believes it. You can tell that he believes that this stuff happened. But if you do want to check it out, it is on Amazon Prime. He does have two other siblings, but they didn't want to participate in this. Christopher Lutz himself, he has spoken, but Missy, apparently, she shies away from all of it. But while the children do have their versions, while George and Kathy do have their versions, one thing that has always come up is apparently George and Kathy never changed their story. So while the Amityville is one of the most famous stories going, it's one of the most famous, you know, haunted houses in America. With that obviously comes lots of questions and the validity. But since the Lutzes left their home, it has been occupied by other people who have never complained of any strange goings-on within the home. Now, parapsychologist Professor Hans Holzer explains that this could be due to all the occupants not being sensitive enough. That it is a ticking time bomb. He believes someone will move into the house one day who has qualities of Ronald Butch DeFeo Jr., and all this will start all over again. Butch himself has stated that he believes the film is him. He believes that he is the Amityville Horror, and he has been made to look like a monster. That is why he has yet to be released. So, at the end of the day, was the story a hoax like some believe, or did this actually happen? Either way, it does make for an interesting movie. And in a documentary on the History Channel, George said, and I will leave you with this, "I believe this has stayed alive for 25 years because it's a true story. It doesn't mean that everything that has ever been said about it is true. It's certainly not a hoax. It's real easy to call something a hoax. I wish it was not. It's not." And that is my little take on the Amityville Horror and the story of the Lutzes. And I guess it's up to you with what you believe. I believe personally that something did go on in that house, but what that is, I'll never truly know. And now for something a bit more upbeat, and that is my podcast promo. This week, I'd like to introduce you to a rather unique podcast. I myself have never heard of this as an idea for a podcast before, so I was pleasantly surprised. And that is the Surprise Scenario podcast. But here they are to tell you for themselves.
Two lifelong friends.
Oh.
An unbelievable scenario.
You've woke up in the body of a dog.
Suicide by time travel.
What will they do?
Go on. I'll give you some money for the Zoltar machine.
Jake, get away from that Zoltar machine.
Join Nick and Jake each week as they surprise each other with a new scenario.
And Jake has at Nick.
No, you can't do that.
Surprise Scenarios, available on most podcast platforms. It's gonna mess you up.
Make sure you go follow them on all the social medias, have a listen to the podcast and rate and review. There's a few episodes out there, so there's a lot of binging to be done. Anyway, I'd like to say thank you for listening, and don't forget to rate and review on iTunes. I really do appreciate all the feedback. I've had some really nice comments, which I appreciate, plus all those who have promoted in some form. I do appreciate that too. But if you want even more of me, you can find me on Instagram as Once Upon a Nightmare Podcast, on Twitter and Letterboxd as A Nightmare Pod. You can email me as onceuponanightmarepod@gmail.com, and I am WordPress and Facebook as Once Upon a Nightmare. And I'd like to say thanks for listening again, and I will chat to you very soon. Bye.